How nice to be here with you all in Iskon and Senton. Very good. So we are this evening going to continue our Round Nomi theme. We're asked to focus this evening on the exile, the banishment of Lord Ram, those particular events and considerations in that connection. So we'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. And we'll read text 8. Yasatya pasha parivita pitur nidesha stray nasya chapi shirasa jagrihe sabarya rajyam shriyam pranayana surido nivasam tyaktvaya yo vanamasun eva mukta sangha. Translation. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well wishes, residence, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life, and went to the forest with Sita. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Dasarath had three wives. One of them, Kaikeyi, served him very pleasingly, and he therefore wanted to give her a benediction. Kaikeyi, however, said that she would ask for the benediction when it was necessary. At the time of the coronation of Prince Ramachandra, Kaikeyi requested her husband to enthrone her son, Bharat, and send Ramachandra to the forest. Maharaj Dasarath, being bound by his promise, ordered Ramachandra to go to the forest according to the dictation of his beloved. And the Lord, as an obedient son, accepted the order immediately. He left everything without hesitation, just as a liberated soul or great yogi gives up his life without material attraction. Let me read the verse again. Yasatya pasha parivita pitur nidesham stray nasya chapi shirasa jagrihe sabharya rajyam shriyam pranayina surido nivasam tyaktvaya yova namasun eva mukta sangha. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramachandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well wishes, residence, and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life, and went to the forest with Sita. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastuchyade Shitarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lunch Kapa Turibius Chai Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Paritanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Well, it's very nice to be here with you all, nice devotees, and see how our ISKCON Santan project is developing and devotees are getting involved and participating in Prabhupada's movement and serving and helping to develop the project. Ram Navami is coming up, of course, on Tuesday. And it's a very special day, a very wonderful day, the anniversary of the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. And the story of Lord Ramachandra is very wonderful. It's in many ways, it's very different from the story of Lord Krishna, very different from the story of Lord Chaitanya. But still, there are many interesting things to learn and to just observe and appreciate in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. Actually, in the previous verse, which I didn't read, it says an interesting... It's a Vedic, it's a very Vedic-like mode of expression, way of putting things, that the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra were wonderful, like those of a baby elephant. We are not familiar with baby elephants, but apparently they're really, you know, intriguing and wonderful little creatures with very special character and special moods and emotions like that. So the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, they're very wonderful with very wonderful moods and emotions and different amazing happenings. One thing we can learn, as this verse and purport is particularly focusing on, is that we should be very careful what promises we make. We should be very careful what commitments we make. Here, of course, I think you're all familiar with the basic story, this particular part of it, that there was some big battle and Maharaj Dasarath, who was extremely powerful, Dasarath, he was powerful enough that he just single-handedly could fight with and overpower and destroy 10 chariots with their, each one with their warrior on it, with all the weaponry and so on like that. Those war chariots, they were sort of, you know, you could say something like parallels of the modern day tanks as war machines. They're very powerful, very imposing types of war machines, which when used properly could inflict, you know, massive like casualties and chaos on the enemy. But Maharaj Dasarath, he was so powerful that he single-handedly, just standing on the ground on his own, could fight with 10 chariots and the charioteers and the big, big warriors on the chariots single-handedly, just standing on the ground, even though they're moving and flying around with great speed and in a very, very heavy type of war machine. So Maharaj Dasarath was that powerful. He could fight with and defeat 10 chariots. Which, you know, for one single warrior just standing on the ground on his own without a chariot, that's very, very major achievement. But there was one situation in one battle where he was wounded in his, that particular wife, he had three wives. This particular wife, Kaikeyi, saved his life and carried him away from the battlefield and nursed him, and in this way saved his life. And he, in the mood of a noble Kshatriya, he told her that, "I owe my life to you. Tell me what you want. It's yours. Anything." And as Prabhupada mentions here, the story goes in Ramayana, that she said, no, it's okay, I don't need anything right now, but I'll bear it in mind, and in the future, when the need arises, then I'll ask." And he said, "Fine." So this is what happened. Actually, Kaikeyi was not like an envious person. She was one of his wives and was a very devoted and very dedicated, actually, but, and this is of course another lesson, she got into bad association. Association is extremely powerful and shouldn't be underestimated. She got into bad association with a very envious person called Mantara, who was, not exactly sure what her role was, but she was some sort of assistant, female assistant. And she was physically deformed, and her mind was like that too. She had a very sort of ugly mind, envious mind. And somehow or other, this Mantara got to be accepted by Kaikeyi as supposedly, apparently, a well-wisher and someone who should be taken seriously and kind of taken shelter of. And this Mantara really polluted her mind very severely, very severely. Although, generally speaking, she was a very pious lady and a devotee, and very devoted to her husband. But she fell under the influence of Mantara, and her mind changed. And, you know, I imagine you all know the story, at least basically, that a Mantara told her that, well, the coronation or the, it was, I think the pre-coronation, was it, or the coronation? He was going to be installed as Yuvraj, right? As the crown prince. As the crown prince, it's like a preparatory step before actually, after some time, becoming the actual king. So this Mantara, she spoke to Kaikeyi in a very devious, underhanded and nasty way. And she told Kaikeyi that, look, you know, now your husband is going to install Ram as the Yuvraj, the crown prince, and then he's going to become the king in a little while, and you know what will happen? You know what will happen is that your son, Kaikeyi's son was Bharat, your son is going to be abused, cheated, maybe killed. He's not just gonna be, you know, like on a little bit of a lower level than Ram, and you know, assisting him as part of the government for the ruling of the state. But actually, this Ram, he's probably going to kill him and just, you know, just really mistreat him most severely. So you don't want this to happen. You don't want this to happen. But what you must do, and she reminded Kaikeyi of the promise, that you must request your husband two things. One, you make Bharat the king, or the Yuvraj and then the king. And two, you banish Ram to the forest for 14 years. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. 14 years. Why 14 years? Why not just banish him to the forest? Why 14 years? Anyway, well, that's what happened. 14 years. So, you know, the influence of bad association. Like we said, don't underestimate it. It's extremely powerful, actually. Well, any association is extremely powerful. But we, as conditioned souls who've been in material existence so long, we're very susceptible to bad influence. We're very sort of sensitive. We can be easily influenced by, particularly by negativity. So therefore, you know, they say, Prabhupada even referred to it, you can tell a person by the company they keep. And whatever company you keep, you'll be like that in due course. If you associate with thieves, you become a thief. If you associate with devotees, you become a devotee. And if you associate with very sincere, very dedicated devotees who are just heart and soul surrendered to the Lord, to the spiritual master, to Srila Prabhupada, and just really trying their best to help the Krishna consciousness movement and push things forward. If you associate with devotees like that regularly, you'll become like that. You'll become like that. But if you associate with some mantra, or, you know, mantra's friend, or someone following in the footsteps of mantra, then you'll become like that too. And don't think that, you know, not me. You know, I'm sort of, you know, I know better. I can filter it out. Before you know, you'll find the filters have been taken out. They're just not there any longer. So, yeah, association. In Krishna consciousness in general, association. Well, in life in general, association is a very important consideration. And we all, as aspiring devotees, we should really try our best to regularly get good association. And this is why we have this center here. You know, Prabhupada wanted a center like this in every suburb, really. ISKCON Center. What's the next one? ISKCON Bryanston. ISKCON Randburg, ISKCON Rand Park Ridge, ISKCON you know, etc., etc. All over. Prabhupada wanted that. And you read in different places in the Bhagavatam, there's one particular purport in which Prabhupada says, we have established this Krishna consciousness movement so people can get the good association of devotees. So poor Kaikeyi, she was susceptible like that. And she became influenced like that. And she did that. She actually did it. She demanded it. Against all good sense. Because Ram, everyone knew, and she knew that Ram, well, Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but in his pastimes as that the prince and the leading prince in the family, he was such a man, young man of principles, of honor in the nice sense. Yes, he was such a person of such impeccable character, and everyone knew it, and she knew it. Kaikeyi knew it extremely well, because she was the co-wife. She's like the like a mother to Lord Ram. But still, due to the influence of bad association, this is what happened. So be wary of bad association. Or if we look at it from the other perspective, always make a real effort to get good association. Means of serious devotees, and not just devotees in a sort of generic sense, but devotees of Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, followers of Srila Prabhupada. Very, very specifically, followers of Srila Prabhupada are really unique amongst in the world of Vaishnavas and Vaishnavism. They're really very special. And be careful about making promises. Sometimes it happens at the time of initiation. I'm sure you've heard it yourselves happen. Some devotees getting initiated, very nice, and they come and they're asked, okay, what are the four regulative principles? And you know, they say the four regulative principles, and how many rounds are you going to chant? 16 rounds, but in some cases they say, and on Ekadasi, 25. And it's all very nice, that sort of determination that I'm going to do this. But, anyway, but, Prabhupada, of course we should chant as much as we can. We should chant more than we can. We should just chant and chant and chant. You know, 24 hours, 8 days a week. Hari Nam Eva Kevalam Kirtaniya Sada. Yeah, we should just really chant all the time. But Prabhupada did not actually say, to our knowledge, that, like, in the sense of how we must chant 16 rounds, you know, that's clear, that's really clear. But Prabhupada did not say that on Ekadasi you must chant 25 rounds. Of course, it's extremely nice to do it, extremely nice. To do more, too, is just wonderful. But we've actually seen that devotees who've tried to take that vow, or specifically have, that after some time they've found it difficult to maintain. So, yeah, don't make promises you can't keep, or at least, you know, be careful what vows you take. Devotees are people who take vows. Dridha Vrata. This is mentioned there in Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanastumam Parata. That they, the great souls, they take vows. They apply themselves in Krishna consciousness according to vows. So that's there. But we have to be careful to be, you could say, responsible and realistic in our vows. So, you know, in a few cases, people, devotees I've seen who've come to me, and you know, having at least some idea of their spiritual situation. Well, it's even like sometimes when they're initiations, it becomes like what they call a bit of a role. That one devotee says, right, 16 rounds and 25 in a courtesy. And the next one says, yes, 16 rounds and 25. And there's a bit of a role. And the next one, who you happen to know, is, you know, I mean, they're nice, but it's not, they may not really be quite able to manage that. Personally, I've actually, on a couple of occasions when they've said that, I said, look, okay, you know, it's very nice, you've got that idea, but look, just chant 16 rounds. And on Ekadasi, do more. If you can do 25, fine, but at least do 16. I discussed it. There was a discussion with Giriraj Maharaj many years ago when he was very much involved here in the later 80s on this specific point. On this specific point. Exactly this point. And the conclusion was that if devotees take that sort of, it's you could almost say a somewhat irresponsible vow or not properly thought out vow at least, but then they don't maintain it. The thing is, they took the vow. And, you know, at the time of initiation in front of the deities, the spiritual master, the devotees, the fire, it's a real vow. It really is. And then later on, if you find it a bit of a struggle, and you say, well, you know, it's okay. But you're breaking a vow. You're actually breaking a vow. So better to do it the other way around and maintain 16 rounds and on Ekadasi or any time, do more. So this is what happened to Maharaj Dasarath. You know, he's a Kshatriya. He's like a real Kshatriya. There's that nobility of character, upstandingness of character, and that, like, even a type of pride. You know, generally in a very nice way. But somehow or other, he made that promise, he made that commitment, and it didn't work out. It really didn't work out. Yeah. So, yes. So then the verse goes on to say, and Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that Lord Ram, when he was exiled by his father ordered him, you know, of course, Dasaratha was not at all happy. In fact, he was just devastated in the extreme, and he just died very shortly afterwards out of just devastation and distress because of that situation. So, but Lord Ram, when Dasaratha told him, this is the situation, you know, I have to exile you for 14 years to the forest. And this is just the way it is. And Dasarath apologized to Lord Ram. And he expressed regret, and, you know, he was in a really deeply emotional, regretful mood. But Lord Ram, as the verse says and Prabhupada mentions, Mukta Sangha. Just like a liberated soul, he left home. He accepted the exile, the order of his father. Like a liberated soul, leaves home and goes to the forest. You know, when in the fifth canto, Bharat, well, not this Bharat, but another Bharat Maharaj, he reached a certain point in his life and he left home and went to the forest. And of course, that's a long story. You know, he met that deer and so many things happened. But anyway, at least initially, he was an advanced devotee. He was on the level of Bhava. And the time came to leave home. And he did. And the Bhagavatam says he left everything. His kingdom, his wealth, his family, his wives, and his power. And just everything, just a materially, by our standards, completely fantastic situation. Unbelievable. Opulence and so on. But when the time came, he left home, and he left all of that, just like a person who has passed stool, leaves stool and goes. This is what the Bhagavatam says. You know, a colorful example. But, well, we all know what that means, don't we? Yeah. And it was not. There was no sentimentality or, you know, they didn't have a farewell party with speeches and so long, it's been good to know you, all this sort of thing. Just one morning they realized, oh, he's not here. He's gone. And he had gone. And he had gone. His mood in going was not, you know, like a mood of regret and dissatisfaction that, oh, I have to go. What can you do? But he embraced it wholeheartedly. So Lord Ram, when Dasarath was crying and just, you know, beside himself with grief and just feeling so terribly bad, like he's cheated his dearest son. But Lord Ram said to him, what's the problem? What's the matter? You're ordering me to do this? That's most wonderful. I feel so happy. I'm just so happy that he has an opportunity to execute an order of yours, to uphold your word and serve you. This is practically like the greatest occasion in my life. Oh yeah. It's just like joyful. Joyful. I can serve my father, who is a devotee. Yes, I can serve you and help you uphold this promise of yours. That is just most wonderful. And no complaining. No complaining. Yeah, oh, come on. You know, it's not fair. Why? You know, look, we can dream up a scriptural injunction which counteracts it. Okay? You know, we'll find, because if you look in Shastra, You can find almost anything, actually. You know, at least if you go into the Karma Kandya Shastras and these, you know, more marginal type Shastras that are not pure Krishna conscious scriptures, you can find all sorts of things. We see, for example, in the 8th canto in the story of Bali Maharaj, when Bali Maharaj promises to Lord Vamana that you can have 3 steps of land, but then Shukracharya, the family, not exactly guru, but certainly the family priest and the official sort of religious head, he understood this is Vishnu. This is Vishnu, who is the well-wisher of the demigods, and you, Bali, you just kick the demigods out, and you're their enemy. So there's, you know, something, he's up to something here. You give him 3 steps of land, and it's not going to be that simple. You're going to lose everything. So Shukracharya did just that, actually. I mean, just that. He dreamt up all sorts of, they're kind of quasi-spirit, scriptural types of considerations, which, he said, would justify breaking the promise. Promise was, you can have 3 steps of land. That was the promise. So, you know, if that's really colorful, actually, some of the things he dreamt up. If, for example, if you make a promise, but before stating your promise, you do not say Om, you can break the promise. And it's legitimate. It's legitimate. And if, now if you make a promise, but then it becomes apparent that by upholding the promise, you will become materially disadvantaged, you'll lose money, then it's okay, you can break the promise. It's, in other words, it's a way of just saying anything goes. And, you know, don't mind me saying this, but it's not me, it's Shukracharya. He says that there is nothing wrong with breaking a promise. There's even nothing wrong with lying in certain situations, like, and this is the interesting one, bringing a woman under control. You can lie. It's okay. We won't ask you what you think, ladies. And it's not that this is Krishna consciousness. It's not. This is Shukracharya who's, you know, got a really devious mind. So, well, you know what it's like with people. They, when things start going wrong, they break promises, they lie, they cheat, and as far as they're concerned, it's justified because they're sort of defending their own positions. So Lord Ram did not do that at all. He really didn't do that. And just like a liberated soul who leaves home and goes to the forest and goes out on his quest for liberation and moksha and even going back to Godhead, just like the liberated soul, it's a time for celebration that I'm leaving my material entanglement behind. So Lord Ram, his mood was like that. That is just so wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm just so happy. So in this sort of mood, Lord Ram went into the exile, and Mother Sita volunteered, basically. Well, yeah, Lord Ram told her this is the situation. And Mother Sita said, oh, okay, when are we leaving? And Lord Ram said, we are not leaving. I am leaving. And she said, no, we are leaving. And Lord Ram, I don't have all the details of the discussion. It's a very interesting, you know, it's quite an amazing discussion, actually. Lord Ram basically orders Sita that you cannot come. She basically forbade her because he said, it's just not suitable. It wouldn't be right for a lady to have to undergo this, and you know, the austerity, the discomfort for 14 years. And after all, Lord Ram said, you're not the one who's been banished. It's me. It was not you and me. It was me. So I'm going and you stay, and you know, I'll be back. And but Mother Sita, even though she was forbidden, she wouldn't accept. And she insisted on coming. And for wives, devotee wives, and you know, would-be devotee wives, it's actually very interesting to read Sita's, you know, how she expresses herself to Lord Ram, how she's coming, and that's it. And the basic point is that you're my husband, that means you're my life, and that's all. And she says, what sin, what terrible offense have I committed, as a result of which I supposedly cannot come with you? What have I done? Have I done some, you know, like shockingly terrible, heinous act so that I am denied to come with my husband? And she expresses at length her dedication to Lord Ram, that I have never, what to speak of ever looking at another man, I've never thought of another man, ever, at all. So I'm coming. And she came. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's something interesting for the ladies. Of course, you know, her husband was Ram, who that says a lot. That says a lot. But she was Sita. That also says a lot. I mean, it really says a lot, a huge amount. And she explains to Ram how, you know, I'm going to come with you and I'm going to serve you in this way and that. I'll walk in front of you with bare feet, so my feet pick up the thorns, so your feet don't have to suffer the thorns. And I'll chase away the animals, the wild animals. Anyway, it's a long thing her sort of soliloquy to Lord Ram, and eventually Lord Ram can't say no. So off they went. But just before they went, I was just reading this evening actually, that Shatrughna, one of the other brothers, Shatrughna, everyone found out it was Mantara, this like hunchbacked and evil-minded woman who somehow or other was hanging around the palace. Everyone, they found out it was her. And so Shatrughna, he went and he grabbed her. Mantara was feeling really, you know, like I did a good thing. She dressed herself up, even though, you know, she's deformed and just like a materially hopeless case. But she dressed up in fancy clothes, fancy ornaments, and she was kind of celebrating her success. And Shatrughna came and caught her and smashed her physically. Smashed her onto the ground and started dragging her along the floor. Just dragging her around and sort of throwing her across the floor, and she's smashing into things and all her ornaments is smashed and they're all like rolling around the floor, and Shatrughna grabbed her again and just hurled her down, you know, down like the whole way further, and he was going to kill her. And he was chastising her verbally, and Bharat came. And Bharat said, you know, I feel so bad about this. I'm thinking of killing my mother, Kaikeyi, who, you know, was the wife who brought it all, everything on. He said, you know, I'm thinking of killing Kaikeyi, my mother, because of this, her just like most incredible offense. So I'm thinking of killing her. And you're in the process of killing this Mantara. But, you know, I think if we do this, it will displease Ram. It will displease Ram. And he will not speak to us. He'll like withdraw his association from us. And he told, Bharat told Shatrughna, that actually women cannot be punished physically. Isn't that nice? Well, women, children, and old men. cannot be punished physically. Yeah. So, you know, therefore I'm not going to kill my mother. And you have to stop beating this woman. So Shatrughna stopped. But, you know, that's very interesting to see. The emotions, the feelings that were aroused, it was intense. And then off they went on into the exile. And, well, Lakshman came too. And Lakshman had, they had all been married at the same time. Not just Sita and Ram, but they'd all been married. Who knows the name of the wife of Shatrughna? Ah, someone knows. Shrutikirti.
Urmila.
Huh?
Urmila,
yes. No. Urmila is the wife of Lakshman. And who's the wife of Bharat?
Mandavi.
Huh?
Mandavi.
Mandavi. So Lakshman went with Lord Ram But Urmila didn't come. She stayed back. She stayed back. So, let me just... So off they went, you know, really happy. And there's a famous story, I've told it many, many times now over the last sort of several months or something. How Sitaram Lakshman, off they went. And they went to the southeast, following the Ganges, more or less. Basically following the Ganges. And they had to cross the Ganges at one point. And actually they were approaching Navadweep. They went to Navadweep, just in the very early stages of the exile. So they had to cross the Ganges. They got on a boat, they're crossing the Ganges, and Ram said to Sita that we have to pay this boatman. What should we give him? And Sita had a nice pearl necklace on, and Ram said, you know, we're not going to need things like this now. We're just going to be living in the forest. Let's give it to him as a payment. So they reached the other side, and Ram handed him this necklace. And the boatman said, no, I can't take it from you. This ride was free. It's my offering to you. And Ram said, no, I have to pay. I'm a Kshatriya. I can't accept charity. And the boatman said, no. He said, the thing is, in this area, all the boatmen, all of us boatmen, the boatman community, we have an agreement. If we take each other on our boat, take, you know, another boatman on our boat, we don't charge each other. So you're a boatman, Ram, and I can't charge you. And I'm not charging you. And Ram said, what do you mean you're a boatman? I mean, what do you mean I'm a boatman? I'm not a boatman. I'm a Kshatriya. I have to pay you. Can't accept charity. And the boatman said, no. You're a boatman. I can't charge you. And Ram said, what do you mean I'm a boatman? And the boatman said, I'm a little boatman. I'd take people on my little boat across the Ganges. But you're a big boatman. You take people on your boat to the other side of the ocean of birth and death, to the kingdom of God. So you're a boatman, and I can't charge you. I can't charge another boatman. And Lord Ram laughed. And the boatman said, however, I want to make a deal with you. Just as I have not charged you for going on my boat, when I get on your boat, you must take me across and not charge me. And Lord Ram said, all right, it's a deal. Anyway, I'm sure you've heard that before, but it's very nice. And then they ended up in Navadweep. They ended up actually in Modadrum Dweep. When you go there, if you go on the Navadweep Parikrama, you visit Modadrum Dweep. It's on the other side, on the western side of the Ganges, sort of to the northwest, on the northwestern side of Navadweep Dam. And there's, you know, places connected with Lord Ram, and there's different pastimes of Lord Ram that occurred there. Let me just close by telling you one little pastime. That Lord Ram, there they were, Sitaram Lakshman, in Modadrum Dweep. Modadrum, drum means tree, and Moda means very beautiful, very big and very beautiful tree. The island of the big, beautiful tree. It was a big, old, big, big banyan tree. So Lord Ram was sitting under it one day, and he was sitting there with a sort of distant look on his face, like he's deep in thought. not so aware of his surroundings, but with a big smile on his face. And Mother Sita approached him and said, "My lord, what is this wonderful thing that you're thinking about? You seem to be sort of lost, immersed in thought about something really wonderful." And Lord Ram said, "Yes, you know, it's really wonderful. I am thinking that you and I, we will appear here together in Kali Yuga." And Sita said, "Really? That's wonderful." And Ram said, "Yes, and we'll be husband and wife again. I will be known as Nimai. You will be Vishnu Priya.
Sure.
And we'll be husband and wife again. And we'll be together again. And we'll give everyone love for us. We'll just benedict the whole world." And Sita said, "Ah, that is just wonderful. I'm looking forward to it so much." And Lord Ram said, "And the best thing is, I am going to give you special nectar. I'm going to give you some special mercy when we appear together as Nimai and Vishnu Priya." And Sita said, "Really? Special mercy? Oh, that's wonderful. What special mercy?" And Lord Ram said, "I am going to give you the highest experience of love for me. It is called Vipralamba Bhava, the ecstasy of love in separation." And Sita said, "What? Separation?" And Ram said, "Yes, it is millions of times higher than the ecstasy of being together, and I'm going to give it to you." He said, "I'm going to give it to you by taking sannyas. When I'm 24 and you are 16, I will leave you and take sannyas, and in this way give you the most wonderful thing, the Vipralamba." And Sita said, "What? That's not nice. That's cruel. How can you do that?" And Lord Ram said, "No, it is. It's millions of times better. It's just the most wonderful thing." And Ram said, "I wanted to give it to you now. That's why I arranged that I came into exile. But you insisted on coming with me, so I couldn't give it to you. But now, that time, I'm going to take sannyas, and then you can't come with me. We cannot be Mr. and Mrs. Swami." So I'm thinking about it, and it's just so nice. I'm so happy. So, yeah. So, of course, he did that. But anyway, yes, these pastimes of Lord Ram, they're really nice. Really, really nice. And there are many lessons to be learnt from, you know, in all different sorts of ways there. There are many lessons to be learnt. And it's coming up on Tuesday, just a few days away. In the meantime, we should try to immerse ourselves in reading about Lord Ram and his pastimes. You know, particularly this 10th chapter of the 9th canto is the best resource, actually, when it comes to Lord Ram. You know, you can get Ramayana, different versions of Ramayana, even ISKCON devotees have produced, which is basically very nice. But Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authentic, I mean completely the most authentic. And even though it's quite a brief description, But it's a very beautiful description, extremely beautiful description of Lord Ram and the most essential parts of his pastimes. So let's absorb ourselves in cultivating that, reading, studying, and cultivating remembrance. And then Tuesday is Ram Navami, and I'll just be ecstatic. Just so wonderful. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Shri Ram Navami Mahotsava Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. What's our program now?
Have
a kirtan. Okay. So let's have a kirtan.